Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so grateful that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So I am owner and founder of my company, I Am Creative, and my mission is to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and empower people, especially adults, to own their talents that come in so many different forms. So this is meant to be a safe space to talk to people who have all different kinds of jobs, hobbies, and interests, and we have a conversation to explore various experiences and perspectives, all based around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think it's important? And then we have a free-flowing conversation, and we see where it goes. So I have spoken to real estate agents, entrepreneurs, a physics teacher, handwriting specialist, organizer, and so many more. And by sharing their stories, it reinforces that when you give yourself permission to explore and express yourself daily, you will feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So my inspiring guest today is Sue Wilhite. And after spending 20 years in management information systems, as well as a business systems degree, she learned business from the inside as well as the outside. Sue became known as the Profit Attraction Master, and she loves helping others by making complex subjects understandable and relatable. Sue, welcome to the space.
Hi, Hollis. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I am so happy that you're here. This is going to be so fun.
Oh, yeah.
So fun. So I kind of made, you know, your bio, I know, is really condensed, and you have had so much life and so much living. So I'm wondering, before we dive into our would you rather question and the questions, could you give us like a short synopsis of kind of what that all means as to business systems, and then also define what a profit attraction master is? I know we'll get more into it, but.
Yeah. So the condensed version is something that I'm beginning to pivot to let people know that they're not stuck with one thing for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And my life is a beautiful illustration of this, where I started out wanting to be a veterinarian, ended up in business information systems, being a programmer and a systems analyst for everything from startups to multi-billion, multi-country companies, and becoming a hypnotherapist, becoming an event manager, owning a bookstore. So it's right. And all of these things reflect pieces of who I am. And the theme is that underlines all of this, because it sounds completely disconnected, but I will tell you, the theme is I have always wanted people to be the best that they can be so that they can have a fuller life. And so when I was in information systems, it wasn't that I, you know, was a techie nerd, which I was, but my whole reason for doing this was to create systems and reports so people could go home early, and they could be with their family. Becoming a hypnotherapist was to help people get out of their own way to improve their health, to improve their mindset. Being a bookstore owner was just absolutely wonderful, because I was always saying, oh, you've got to read this book. Here's this book. You got to read this. And this just gave me a reason to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And becoming a coach sort of evolved out of that, and becoming the Profit Attraction Master was based on my years and years and years of being in businesses and watching businesses and helping them grow and doing the things that supported that, and noticing what decisions they made that succeeded and which ones didn't. And going from that to helping people be the best that they are, I ran into business owners who, bless their hearts, wanted to help people like I did, but had a lot of trouble asking for the money, a lot of trouble recruiting clients, being able to attract clients. And so I came up with the profit attraction formula to help business owners who are struggling with those things to be able to get over that and be able to have a thriving business so that they could go out and change the world and have the life that they loved.
Which is so amazing, because as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking, she's so heart-centered. I mean, it's just all coming from the heart space. So here, you're speaking from real experience. You're not just somebody who's like, well, you do this, this, and this because I read about it. I mean, you've really done all these different kinds of things. So
yes,
you're very relatable.
Thank you. Yes, I try to be. I mean, that's one of the things that I boast about. When I boast, is I boast that I can have a conversation with nearly anybody about nearly anything.
Right.
And it really doesn't matter, you know, pick a subject. And somebody challenged me on that and said, okay, let's talk about, you know, nuclear weaponry. And I said, great. My stepson at the time is on a boomer submarine right now. What do you want to know?
You were like, bam.
Yeah. Okay, we're done.
So did you have a discussion about it? I'm like,
you did.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Did.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's, and as I said, the word relatable, I just looked at your bio where the last word was relatable.
Yes.
I like just made that connection, and I didn't mean to like say that, but it really is true. I mean, it's just, when you do all these different kinds of things, people could be like, oh, they're so scattered. They're so unfocused. But the beauty of it is that you have these experiences that build upon each other. And then in the end, you're doing something that you're so passionate about, which is fully about, like, kind of, it's like that full circle thing. You're working with people who don't know how, like, you already like did this whole business end and you're good at it.
Yes. Yes. I've got the chops, as they say.
You do.
Been there, done that.
This is going to be a great conversation. Okay, so let's dive into this would you rather. It's a pretty simple one, so okay. Not real complicated. So, Sue, would you rather get up very early or stay up very late?
Get up early. That one's easy. I get up at 3:30 in the morning every morning, 7 days a week.
Do you seriously?
Seriously.
Like, seriously. not even the weekends?
Even the weekends.
Wow.
I could take a screenshot of my Fitbit and show you my alarm, but yeah.
So wait, what time do you go to bed?
7:30 to 8:30.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
you're, but like, that means that I don't watch TV. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get out much.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, that would be like, oh my God, that sounds like the most horrible life ever. But I pack a lot between 3:30 and 7:30.
So yeah, so I have to hear this before we move on to the first question. So tell me your routine. What do you do between 3:30 and 7:30 in the morning?
A lot of my morning routine is getting stuff organized. And I absolutely do not interact business-wise until 11 or noon. Mm-hmm. And I try not to schedule anything before noon. And then from noon to 5 is when I schedule my interviews, my appointments, you know, my clients. All of that takes place between 12 and 5. And then from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock is me time, family time.
Wow. That is just, I'm like, wow.
So it's all compartmentalized.
And you really stick to it.
And I really stick to it. I was inspired by Deepak Chopra. I read his book, Quantum Healing, many, 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 many years ago. It was one of his first books. And he talked about his schedule I'm not as I do different things than he did in the mornings, but yeah, it was, you know, he said the only way to succeed is to make these divisions in your day. And that's what I do.
Wow. So have you always been doing this, or is it like for how, well, you said you were inspired, but how long has it been?
The pandemic, I started getting up at 3:30 just about the time the pandemic started. Okay. I was doing that like once or twice a week, before the pandemic started, but when the pandemic started, that was when I really started the 7 days a week schedule. Before that, I would get up anywhere between 4:30 and 5:30. So it wasn't that big of a shift.
You guys are, I'm like, you can't see me, but I'm bowing down. I'm like,
get up.
Because I mean, my husband does this. He was waking up like 2:30, 3:30. Now he's a little bit later because he's not commuting and he's actually sleeping. And he's like, I slept until 4:30 or 5:30. And I'm a snooze presser. So I'm just like, bam, bam. Let's see how many times we can press snooze and then be like, shit, I need to get up. Like,
yeah.
I need to get up. I'm up, of course. But yeah, we're just so different. But I always admire that morning routine. And yeah, I'm sitting here like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not for everybody. I absolutely admit that. People look at me like I've grown three heads and have 15 arms and am an interesting color of chartreuse. But, you know, it's okay. That's me.
But you know what? I've heard that. I've heard multiple people say that. And I think that it is a really good practice. And thank you for bringing it to my awareness again of not doing any business until you say 11 o'clock. I've heard like at least 9 or 10, but making the choice where it's later, where you're not getting sucked into social media.
Yes.
You're not doing all that. And I love hearing that you have this very structured time between 12 and 5 that's like chock full of stuff. And right. Then again, ending it for you.
Yeah. And I very rarely look at email or social media before 10, 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting other things done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that reminder and that inspiration.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. Okay. So Sue, let's dive into the first question.
All right.
So how do you define creativity?
Oh, creativity is the outpouring of your soul.
Oh, outpouring of your soul.
Yes.
That sounds so pretty, yet a little violent, but pretty.
Well, you know, I'm also, you know, remember I said I would always say, you know, you've got to read this book. And, you know, I put books in people's hands. So I'm really more of a word nerd than I am a tech nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And the word inspiration means to be breathed upon by the gods.
Mm.
And so, and if you're a monotheist, you could say breathed upon by God. This is God, you know, sending you information that you want to express. If you're a complete atheist, it is the unconscious welling up and wanting to be visible.
I love that. So the unconscious welling up and wanting to be visible.
Yes.
And I think so much of what happens, I mean, and would you agree too, that people push it down?
Oh, goodness.
And that's the problem.
That's the problem. People push it down. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. We were talking about sleep in general. And she said, you know, she just read something that in older societies, what we would call primitive tribes in really olden days, everybody sat around and said, "Hey, what were your dreams last night?" You know, they treated dreams as something really important, and everybody respected it, and everybody, you know, talked about it and communicated with it. And that was just the way it is. And nobody does that really, unless they have some bizarre dream. Nobody talks about their dreams.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's, in fact, I was talking to a dream specialist here not too long ago. I think there's more awareness to it, but I still think that it falls, you know, into a certain group of people, obviously, who are dream analysts and specialists. And people might say, you know, I don't want to say hippy drippy, but, you know, I think there is people that do have the consciousness that maybe it's more so than it was, but maybe it's not mainstream.
It's definitely not mainstream. Nope.
So do you remember your dreams?
I don't remember all of them. I remember a good chunk of them. And some of them make me laugh. Like tomorrow I'm participating in a really big event. I'm being kind of the tech guru for a Zoom event, a big Zoom event. And I've been doing a lot of, you know, behind the scenes organizing for this and taking care of some things. And last night I had my first stress dream about the event, and I woke up and went, "Oh, cool. Hey, it's Friday. The event's tomorrow. This is my first stress dream. Awesome." Good. Last year I had stress dreams for a month beforehand.
But you know what? I mean, we laugh, but that's really huge. Like, that's a big awareness, because when you say that, it's kind of like, I don't know, what immediately comes to me is when we don't take things as seriously, when we're not questioning ourselves, like, are we worthy? Am I good enough to do this job? Why would they ask me to do it? And you imagine every scenario that could go wrong. Right. Like, it's living in this negative space.
Right.
And here you just had this one dream the day before or 2 days before, and you're like, "Oh, good, cool. We're good."
Yeah. And I embrace my inner self that's feeling stressed about it and go, "You know what? It's going to be what it is, and I'll do the best that I can. And, you know, it'll be what it is, and I'll be stressed during it, and it'll be over." I acknowledge that this could happen. And then when I do get into it and something goes sideways, I'm like, "Oh yeah, well, there's the sideways. Okay, fine."
But like you asked me in your podcast, which I was so grateful to be on. And you said,
"You're like a great guest."
Well, thank you. But like, what was the big hairy audacious thing that happened? So here in this state of saying, now you're in a mindset of, okay, well, that was the sideways. That was the thing.
Uh-huh.
So, but where was that twist? And were you always like this?
Oh, no.
So when did that change?
One of the reasons that I quit my IT information systems job was because I had an ulcer.
Okay.
And I used to carry stress very, very badly. And I used to, and it was because I felt responsible. I was a pleaser. I wanted everybody to be happy. And I felt responsible for their happiness. And being a manager was detrimental to my health with that kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I got into hypnosis was because it enabled me to become more aware of my body and what my own messages to myself were, and to work through those. And it's practice, 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 practice.
Mm-hmm. So it's really great. I mean, really, with everything that you've done, it's really been like it's like scaffolding. Like,
yes.
You had the ulcer. And you left this job and you were like, I can't anymore. It's making me sick. And then you discovered this whole other world as to like, why is this happening and how to make it stop to work on the mindset.
Yes. Yes. And it's been a mindset journey ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's until you, you know, become an enlightened being and shuffle off the planet, you're going to have mindset stuff.
Right.
You know? It's the nature of being human. We've got, and what science is beginning to discover, not only do we have our stuff, but we're carrying a good deal of our ancestors' stuff as well. So, you know, it's a never ending job. It's a never ending. Well, I can't really say it's a job, because to me, every time I find a new layer and I scrape it off, it's like, yes, there goes another one. All right.
Well, you're like the glass, you know, half full, whereas there's a ton of people, the glass half empty. It's like, oh my God, another layer. I suck. Or, you know,
No. I just got a bigger glass.
What is happening to me?
No, because once you accept that you're always going to do work, that yeah. there's always going to be another layer to play with. Can I give you an example that just happened this week?
Please, yeah.
So there was somebody, I won't go into detail because it's a client, but there was somebody who was really being challenging to me about my method and my technique, and was saying, you know, you can't do it this way. This is not okay. You're doing it wrong. And basically getting in my face about what it was that I was doing. And because I've worked really hard on what I do, and I kind of know what I'm doing, it triggered a piece of me that was like, well, I know what I'm doing and you don't.
Right.
And all of that. And I got really angry. And I said, well, you know what? We need to cut the cord. You know, we're not going to work together anymore. And you go off and you have a great life. Bye. And I found myself going over and over and over and over the interaction and being more and more and more right. Have you ever experienced that?
Have I ever experienced that? Let me think. Fixation.
Oh, I didn't want to put you on the spot.
Fixation, perseveration. Let's see. Trigger. I don't know.
And I realized that pulling that anger in and replaying it over and over again is damaging.
Yes.
Right? It was like, wow, I'm bathing in acid right now. Huh, yeah, that's really fun. I'd rather not do this. What is the real trigger?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about being right. It actually was, he was denying me the opportunity to help.
Okay.
And once I got in touch with that piece, the anger went way down.
Mm-hmm.
And I still find myself, you know, replaying it. It still comes up, you know, at random moments. I'll be in the car and I'll think, rawr! Oh, wait. Okay, yeah, we can let that go. Yeah, I know. You were feeling really challenged and you weren't able to do what you love to do and you thought this would be a good fit and it wasn't. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's all right. They'll find somebody else. It's good.
But actually, in saying that, I mean, that's pretty beautiful, actually, in listening to it, because when you thought about it, it's not coming from this, it's actually coming from this place of feeling bad because you want to help him.
Yes.
But immediately you're triggered, which is so normal for us to be triggered in multiple situations of, you know, you're not good at this, da da da. But, you know, am I good enough? Why is this happening? But then your real basis of what you found the core was is I want to help him and I can't.
Yes. Yes. And so many times we do this thing that I call the monkey and the nut. You may have heard this story, the way that some tribesmen catch monkeys is they'll put a nut or a piece of fruit into a narrow necked bottle or a jar, And the monkey will go and put his hand in and try to grab the nut. But then when it's made of fist, it can't pull its hand out. In order to get its hand out of the jar, it has to let go of the nut. And it won't.
I never heard that before. Okay.
And to me, the first time I saw that on a nature program, I went, oh my God, that's what we do. That's absolutely what we do. We get hold of the nut, which is being right, and we don't let go of it. And once you let go of it, then you can step away and go, what is it that I really want?
Oh my gosh, it's brilliant.
Thank you.
It really is. I mean, it's so simple in the sense of, yeah, when we look back on it, what does it boil down to? We like think we're right about things. That's where the argument stems.
Right, right. And we're really wired to do that.
Yeah.
It's a survival thing. So there's no blame and no shame with wanting to be right because we're hardwired for it.
It's interesting because when I would be in the classroom and I had the opportunity to, like, if there were two kids arguing about something and it was about to turn into something big, and I'd get the kids working on something, you know, as being an art teacher, I get the kids working and then I'd pull the kids outside, and as long as it didn't escalate, and I would set my timer on my phone and I'd say, each of you has a minute to speak.
Right.
And you need to listen to each other. You need to listen. You cannot interrupt. You will get your chance to speak. You need to listen to what this person is saying. And I would just put the timer on. I'd say, okay, go ahead. Your turn. And they normally wouldn't take the full minute. They would just say, you know, well, you did this and I didn't like it and da da da. And then give the other person a chance. And 95% of the time, they'd look at each other and they'd say, okay, we're good. And then just go in and work. Because they were listening to each other. We so often don't listen to each other.
Right. That's the biggest thing. Just listening.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we're caught up in being right.
Hmm. Yeah.
Ha. Yeah. Huh. Well, thank you for that story. Never heard it before. And I've never actually seen an example of it either.
Oh, you can Google it, hunting monkeys or something like that, or a hand in the monkey hand in the jar. And they actually have videos of it, and you'll see the monkey and they're just dancing around trying to get their hand out of the jar. And the jar, you know, they've done these really clever things where they put the jar in a net and staked the net down, you know, and made it so that you can't get away with the jar. And they'll just sit there and wait for somebody to walk up to them.
Do they figure it out eventually, like on their own?
No.
No.
Generally not.
Okay.
It's, they won't let go. Even when, you know, the hunter will come up to them, you know, they still won't let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a huge impact on creativity, to bring it back to your subject here, because, you know, I see it all the time. Particularly, I don't necessarily go with the visual arts, but the writing arts, the word arts. You know, writers will get stuck on something, and they won't let go of it. And you know, I know editing is just a very painful process for some people because they won't let go of what they've written, even when an editor who's a professional and going, no, really, this doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You got to let go of it. You got to be able to let go of what isn't working and try something else.
Well, that again brings up a really good point, because I think that really goes across the board in any, because, you know, the mission of my company is to expand the societal definition of creativity beyond just drawing and painting. Right. So even like you put it in within a writer's context, you put it within like a business context, like sitting around a table, brainstorming about ideas and communication skills. And if somebody's stuck in the fact that they're right, then a conversation's not happening. Mm-hmm. And ideas aren't growing. They're not working together. I mean, that's so much of what now it's what they're looking for now in kids going to school within business and getting out of school. They're looking for people who are team players.
Yes.
Who can think outside the box, who can be creative with their thoughts. I mean, that's specifically what they're looking for.
Exactly. Exactly. And to be flexible in their thinking and to be contributing. And here's an example of creativity that I just love is improv comedy.
Yes.
Right. And yeah. I used to go see, up until last year, we went to go see, well, actually up until this year, we saw it last year because the date worked, but we would see Who's Live Anyway, which mm-hmm. is the live version of Drew Carey's show. I forget the name of the show, but anyway.
Who's Live It Anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's mm-hmm. Line Anyway? Yes. And I would love watching that because these people were so incredibly creative and, you know, they take suggestions from the audience and work it into what they're doing on the fly, on the moment, you know, on stage. And my favorite routine was called Choose Again.
Mm.
And it would involve two or three players who were up and they would be working out a scene and somebody would be off site as a director, you know, off to the side going, you know, they'd start a dialogue and the director would go, choose again. And they'd have to come up with another line. They could completely change what's going on. Choose again. I love that part because yeah. That's what we should be doing in life. You know, you come up against something, choose again.
Exactly. Because again, like whole improv is so much about listening.
Yes.
And connection.
Yes.
Like really being present and observant of how you're interacting with that person. You're taking cues from them. And I know that my husband did acting in school. He went for directing theater, film, and video, and they had to do acting. And, you know, he'd talk about when they would miss lines and, you know, right. All kind of stuff that happens because that's just what happens with the nature of the beast.
Right.
If you're listening and if you're present, then you know what's kind of coming up next and you know how to work with it
right.
and juggle. And like you said, just kind of, okay, pivot. Let's,
right. Right.
Let's play yeah. with it and make it look seamless. So the audience usually would never know.
Right. Right. And I've been listening to a lot of old radio shows recently, Jack Benny and Bob Hope and some of the others. And it was hilarious because they'd have the script and then somebody would go off and the rest of them would just follow. Just boom, there we go. And they'd even make comments about it sometimes. It's like, well, that wasn't in the script, but maybe we should have.
You just made me think of in the movie When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, yeah.
So the scene where they're at the Met and they're walking and he puts on, a silly voice and he says, would you have dinner with me? And he says, repeat after me. You know, there's no pepper on my poppycosh or whatever he said. Yes. And you could see that was completely improv because you could see her actually looking off to the side.
Going, what?
And her laugh was really genuine. And yes. She's kind of looking around like, are we going with this? Like, what am I?
Yes.
But I remember, Arthur, my husband brought it to my attention and he's like, that was totally improv. And they just went with it. And yeah, you just remember the scene because of it.
Cool.
It was natural. But what you're also kind of talking about too, which you brought up, is making me think of that whole flow state.
Yes.
And when you're in flow and you're just kind of in that moment, that meditative kind of that moment, and that's where the best, and it's also making me think of mistakes. Like I call them in the art room, I'd say beautiful oops. There's this book, yeah. Children's book called Beautiful Oops. And every time the kids would come in, you know, we would say every day the expectations. And one of them was like, beautiful, what happens if we make a mistake? Beautiful oops, try again.
And
to kind of get that mantra in our heads that you're going to mess up. It's just par for the course.
It is what it is. That's going to happen. Yes.
And you can't have a meltdown every time it happens.
Right. I mean, you could, but it's not going to do you much good.
It doesn't feel good.
Yeah, generally not. That's where the ulcers come from.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Wow. So I have to acknowledge our listener here live. Thank you so much for being here. Very grateful to be here. Please feel free to ask any questions, make any comments by typing them in the chat box below. So, Sue, let's move on to the second question, which is, and it's some stuff that we've covered, but maybe we can dive in a little bit further. How do you incorporate creativity into your own life?
Oh, goodness. writing, coming up with new ideas for reaching customers, being able to explain something perhaps a little bit better, being able to share something. You know, to me, creativity is also recognizing the genius in others. And when I see something beautiful, I want to share it.
Mm.
And I do that a lot. It's mm-hmm. that, oh, you got to read this book. You have to see this article. You have to get this. Because in to me, anything that lights up the brain, anything that brings on happiness or helps people get into that flow state, that's absolutely wonderful. The other thing that I do is I have a dash cam on my car. And whenever I'm driving anywhere, if I see something fun, I'll have the dash cam take a picture of it.
So like, give me an example.
Well, my very first one was a triple rainbow. That was a triple rainbow. It wasn't like, oh, there's a really dark one and there's kind of a medium one and a kind of a, you know, faint one. It was like triple rainbow.
Wow.
Yeah. Another one. So what are the odds of this? I pulled up to a stoplight. The car in front of me had as part of its license plate, YES. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, cool, it's a yes car. Car pulled up in the lane next to it.
Oh, no.
It had as its license plate, NOP.
Are you serious?
I am serious. I have the video to prove it. What are the odds?
That's really funny. But you're capturing these moments, and yes. That's really cool. Like, you're capturing, because I mean, it sounds like cheesy and all this, but life is really all of these moments.
Yes. Yes. And that's creativity, is making the most of these moments, is being aware of these moments, is, you know, incorporating these moments into your psyche, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's you know, when I'm out in the world, I take drives. This is one of the things that I do, is I just drive around. That's how I think. Particularly during the pandemic, when at the beginning, when it wasn't so cool to walk, people were getting freaked out about being outside at all until they calmed down about it. I just get in my car and drive.
Mm-hmm.
Roads were empty. I could think. I could work things out. I could say things out loud. Nobody could hear me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I could work things out. And experience beauty.
Mm.
In nature, in architecture, in all kinds of ways.
Well, I have to say, like, during the time where it was a lot quieter outside as far as people and planes and cars, I mean, it's been talked about plenty of times, but just acknowledging the fact that nature was so happy.
Yes. Seriously.
I mean, you heard like so many, so many birds and so many, like the air is clear, and especially you're in California. So, I mean, you're not in
we got the fires, yeah.
Yes, it's true.
Those lightning fed fires were just some of the most amazing things in the world. But yes, the air was gorgeous out here until the fires. Mm-hmm. And now it's back to being gorgeous. And, you know, sunrises are some of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm. They are pretty magical, aren't they?
They are. That is the word.
Yeah, when we're there's a beach that we go to a lot. One of the two beaches we go to, and it's Cape May and in New Jersey, and there's dolphins a lot. And, I mean, who doesn't see a dolphin and smile?
Right.
I mean, it's pretty impossible. I don't know, for at least from what I've seen, it's you know, there'd be dolphins. You see them generally at least once or twice a week, if not sometimes twice a day, and people would always stand up and be like, you know, look, and smiling. But there was one time I woke up to watch the sunset and the dolphins were jumping as the sun was coming up. And I was like, oh my God, am I dreaming? Like, is this real?
Yeah. I got to swim with a pod of wild dolphins in Hawaii once. And that was one of the most magical experiences ever.
Oh my gosh, what is that like?
Oh, there are no words. We had a guide who was integrated into this pod. He had been interacting with this particular pod of dolphins for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And they knew him, and he would ask permission before getting into the water with anybody, whether they were okay with it. And and if they weren't okay with it, there would be no dolphins. And if they were okay, they'd come to the boat. Mm-hmm. And that day when we got into the water, one of the dolphins came up to him. This always makes me cry. To introduce her new baby. And introduced him to her new baby and had them swim together.
Oh my God, Sue, that's incredible.
That was so cool. He goes, I did not expect this. I did not know she was going to do this. Yeah. And it was absolutely a fabulous thing. You know, we just kind of splashed around in the water and, you know, we were kind of snorkeling and we were kind of swimming, and the dolphins would just come and, you know, swim around us and kind of check us out. And this one lady was going, I don't see any dolphins. I don't see any dolphins. And we're all looking at her going, they're everywhere. And she's going, I don't see any dolphins. And at that moment, one of the dolphins came up and stuck his nose between her legs.
Are you sorry? And
popped her. We're here.
Oh my gosh. What was her reaction?
She shrieked and then she laughed. She's like, oh, there they are.
Oh my gosh, but that's like a metaphor, isn't it?
Right. Kind
of like where somebody's like, there's all this stuff happening. The person's like, I don't see it. I don't see it. You're like, what are you talking about? It's right in front of your face. They literally get bonked. This was between her legs, but here they get bonked to be like, here. Oh, there it is.
There it is. And there's another, you know, aspect of creativity is sometimes you do have to be bonked on the head, or you have to trip or do something to perceive what is right in front of you.
Yes. Yeah. Or have somebody bring something out.
Yeah.
I had a Reiki session where the person, I hadn't been doing my own work for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And she had her hand over my heart and she was just like, oh my gosh, I feel this sadness. And she had these visualizations. Mm-hmm. She was describing what she saw. She's like, I see this like older man with really weathered skin. And she's like, you know, he's working on one of these things that spins. And I'm like, a potter's wheel. And she's like, yeah. And he just feels really sad. And she's like, I don't know. I get this feeling, and I work with clay. So it's at least what I went to school for. And she's like, I don't know. I feel like you need to do at least one more thing. And then she said, it has something to do with your daughter. And I just started crying.
Aww.
Like hysterically. And I was like, where is this coming from? And I wasn't making the connections. And then when I was driving home, all of a sudden I was like, that's what I need to do. And I never worked on the wheel. Mm-hmm. I only did hand building. I was like, I need to throw bowls that are called love note bowls. Oh. And they have messages in them. And the first one's going to be to my daughter.
Aw, how like, cool.
Like that's where it kind of, but it was like that whole kind of way that just unraveled. I didn't know, but she kind of felt this stuckness in me.
Right.
And it turned into this whole thing. I was making them for a while.
Yeah. And I bet you didn't go in there going, gee, I'm feeling really blocked in my pottery. And, you know, can we release this? Right. That's the cool thing about some of these techniques is you go in, you have no idea what it's going to uncover.
But actually, now that you said it, I was feeling blocked in other areas of my life.
Yes.
So I was feeling a lot of anxiousness, a lot of unhappiness, but I didn't know where it was coming from. So when she mentioned that, I'm like, oh my God. And it brought up that emotion, which then all of a sudden I felt a connection to. And in thinking about it, there's kind of like a whole domino effect. I wasn't happy with what I was doing. And I felt disconnected from my kids and all of this kind of stuff because I wasn't giving myself permission right. to actually have an outlet. So it's kind of like that whole thing that also when I'm working with people, it's that whole permission thing. And we get so, as adults, we get so caught up in adulting that we just don't take time for ourselves, which then makes us unhappy and disconnected.
Yes. And that's what causes the anxiety.
Yeah.
Because we're not doing what our subconscious knows that we're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our inner being is going, hello, tap, 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 hello, Hollis.
Yeah.
Hollis.
Yeah. Like the dolphin, like, hey, we're here.
Yes.
Dang it. Oh my God. Going back to that must have just been incredible. And actually thinking about that, like the dolphins pick and choose because dolphins are really intelligent.
Oh, they're smart. They're very smart. Yes. And they chose. Yes. And what my experience was that I was swimming around and I was watching other people interact with the dolphins. And I kept thinking that there was something wrong with my mask because I kept thinking that there was like air escaping from my mask. And I was hearing this weird noise while I was in the water. And mm-hmm. I kept going, God, you know, there's got to be air leaking. And I kept stopping and lying on my back and shaking out the mask and reseating it and putting it back on and, you know, getting it. And I'd still hear this weird thing. And at one point it got really loud and I looked up and I had two dolphins, one on either side of me. It was their echolocation. They were talking to me.
Oh my gosh.
And that was the noise that I was hearing underwater. It wasn't my mask. I was really hearing it.
Oh my. So do you know what they were saying? Like,
have no idea except listen, Sue. Listen up. Pay attention. Oh. It was their version of bonking me.
Wow.
It's like, we're going to make this really loud and really clear. We're going to get right in your face. and you know, we weren't allowed to touch them because they were wild dolphins and you don't do that. But they were definitely close enough to touch. I mean, they were in my face. They were less than an arm's length away.
Oh my gosh. As you're saying this, I'm thinking our daughter is going to be doing a gap year. She graduates this year, and she's going to be, I don't know, one of her things she wants to do is working with animals. And yeah, not sure where she's going to go yet, but I'm just hearing you talk and I'm thinking, oh my God, she wants to actually do something. She's always wanted to do stuff with elephants.
Elephants are awesome.
But yeah. Animals are just animals.
See, now I want to recommend a book.
Okay, tell me.
I think it's called The Eye of the Elephant.
Okay.
And it's by Delia Owens, D-E-L-I-A Owens.
Okay.
And she and her husband had written a book previously called Cry of the Kalahari, which is them doing research on lions and migration in the Kalahari Desert. And this was a follow-up book called Eye of the Elephant, where they were more in the jungle and dealing with all of the poaching and the stuff that was going on with the elephants. And she ended up having this incredible connection to the elephants and just this very mystical, magical connection with them. And it's a beautiful book. Absolutely wonderful.
I'll have to tell Skylar about it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Oh my, I couldn't get through the entire podcast without recommending a book.
See, the past is just, and you're so excited about it, which is amazing. Which leads us to the third question, and we're almost at the top of the hour, which is perfect timing. So the third question is, so why is creativity important? Oh,
that's a question.
Not like we haven't been talking about it at all.
That's a question? Oh my God. We're wired for it. You can't get away from it. You cannot get away from it. Creativity is wired in us. You can't not be creative.
Yeah.
It's going to express itself in some way.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's it's important because it's like, why is oxygen important? Why is water important? Because you got to have it.
Yeah.
If you don't express it, bad things happen.
Yeah. It's that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad things do happen. That's where the whole dis-ease thing comes in.
Yes. Yes. And the more creative you are and the more you allow the creativity to express itself, you know, it's actually very complicated because I'm thinking about, for instance, people like Van Gogh, who his creativity and his inability to be sane was kind of wrapped up in one another, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it has to come out.
Well, his inability to be, it did come out in the vibrancy of his colors and his brushstrokes and his subject matter being everyday life and bringing them to this like dreamlike illumination. I mean, he brought it there, but his mindset and his state of mind left something to be desired.
I admire him and think it's just some of the most amazing art ever, and poor guy, you know. And creativity shows up in all kinds of ways. You know, it can show up as art in visual arts. It can show up with photography. It can show up in being a doctor.
Yep.
It can show up in being a coach. It can show up in, you know, in all the musical arts, of course. And yeah. And it's so funny because, you know, I think about, you know, like I said, I'm a word nerd, and writing, generally speaking, comes easily to me. And I talk to people who are songwriters, and I'm going, how do you do that? I don't understand how you can create music. I mean, I know you do, and I get it, that, you know, mm-hmm. that's what happens. But, wow, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. Like, I just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I do believe that there's certain, that people have certain talents that just come to them naturally.
Right.
I do feel like people also, there's things that they're interested in. Doesn't mean they have to be great at them, but they still enjoy them.
Yes.
I think a big part of the creative process also is doing things that you don't like and doing things that you like, because it's kind of, it's a process, and you can have just as much fun doing something that you don't, that you're not, like I said, like that you're not great at, because you're just kind of giggling all the way through, and
right.
and you're just acknowledging that, you know, it's not my forte, it's not my thing. I would like a Zumba class, although that yes. I walk out on. I have walked out on Zumba classes because I try and think, okay, I can move my body that way. And then once I get there, I'm like, this is just a waste of time, Hollis. Like, your feet and body are not moving at the same rhythm. I'm bumping into people and I'm not laughing about it. So admittedly, I have walked out of those situations. And that's fine. It's just
not for me. Right.
But yeah, when you mentioned doctor, there was on Clubhouse, there is this really cool person. Her name is Dr. Hisla Bates, and she hosts a room where she is a visual artist and also a doctor, and she holds a space for doctors and creativity. And once when I was in the room that she was hosting, it was just amazing to hear this one particular doctor. Just to make the story short, he's a photographer, and finally he started putting his work in his office, but not from a means of look at what I did, but it was a connection to his patients. And when his patients would see the work, he would say to them, what do you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
And it became a talking point, and that way he got to know them as a human being.
There you go.
Beyond the medicine. And it changed his life.
Nice.
Right?
There's a way to use creativity in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't coming from an ego space. It was coming from a, let me know you better so I can help you better, especially within in any situation, but especially as a doctor, when nowadays everybody's so specialized.
Right. Or in a hurry.
Yes.
You know, the way that medicine in the Western world is practiced is limited by certain other things in Western medicine.
Yeah.
And so they get, you know, 10 minutes to go, okay, what's wrong? What can I do? Okay, here's a pill. Bye.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. This is a whole other conversation. So, so great. We are actually right at the top of the hour, and I want know how they can find you. I am going to put it in the bio anyway, but please tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Yes, they can go to my website, which is profitattractionformula.com. Again, that's profitattractionformula.com. Or they can find me on Facebook. You can look for Sue Wilhite. It's pretty easy to find me because my latest collaboration book is part of my profile called Empowered Self-Healing for a Better World. Great book. I'm on Twitter as Positively. I'm on Clubhouse as Positively Sue, I think. I'm on Instagram as Positively Sue or Positively Success. I'm all over the place. I'm everywhere. Just Google me.
It'll all
find me.
Because there's so many ways to connect with you. And I'm just so grateful that you took this hour to spend with me. Thank you so much.
Oh, bless your heart, Hollis. I am so glad we connected.
I am too. I am so grateful. We're part of this great group called the Mentor Studio. And actually, we met in Ken Krell's group first.
Yes.
And then went over to the Mentor Studio. And just such amazing. There are so many incredible people out there. And yeah.
The talent and the creativity is amazing.
Amazing. Just doing so many amazing things. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And to the person who was on with us live, thank you. To everybody listening to the replay, thank you so much. This place is all about, this space is all about inspiring each other, connecting and sharing stories. So it's all meant to empower each other. So please like, follow, and share so we can spread the word and just share the positivity. Because we always need it. And in these times, it's especially an extra bonus. So,
absolutely.
I wish you a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are in this world, and look forward to talking to you again really soon. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye.